But working on real problems is hard. We like to work on pretend problems. We're the Seattle City Council, and we exhale Seattle spirit.
As a city, we have no plan.
Our incarceration rate is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
We'll have domestic violence, homicides in schools because there's guns there.
He was murdered by the police.
Collection of some of the august leaders of the Seattle area, just their words of wisdom to inspire you as we go through this segment together. Seattle City Council has passed a piece of legislation that'll make it your fault if someone breaks into your house, gets into your safe, and steals your gun. From the text line, Todd, why is it my locked home good enough? I have a safe. I consider it a prudent thing to use. But let's be honest. If some thugs break into my home, is it possible to get my safe out of the house? Perhaps the powers that should that be should mandate that my safe needs to be secured to the house. Or better yet, make them too heavy to move. Yeah, that's the next thing. Let's mandate that everybody have a safe like I have, that you're not moving without a forklift, even if you live in a small apartment in the city. Seattle City Council is telling you have to lock up your guns. They don't tell you when. They don't tell you when it's okay to have it by your bedside. They don't care about that. They know it's not enforceable. But let's just go through the logic here real quick. Number one, it is unenforceable, right? Can we all agree on that? Number two, people who are gun owners, responsible gun owners, and I polled you. I think I met one person out of 200 people who responded who didn't have a safe and said he was going to go get a trigger lock because he knew he needed to have a trigger lock. Responsible gun owners lock their guns up, right? Number three, who doesn't? It's the same argument with gun control to begin with. The drug cartels don't lock it up. Our drug cartel members don't lock it up. The gang members don't lock it up. The violent people don't lock them up. Yeah, you know what? There's a higher number of people killed with guns gotten because they've been left out than I thought. It's a high number, but it is nowhere near the gang crime number, which Seattle will not focus on. They are afraid to focus on the fact that gang warfare is afoot in Seattle again. Gang warfare. Building up to sell the legalized heroin that people like Lorena Gonzalez and people like Sally Bagshaw want to have in Seattle.
I have heard of some other models where the drugs are provided and it's a public safety model because those who may not have the money to buy drugs are not breaking and entering to obtain whatever they need to buy. Whatever it is they're using.
Yes, crime avoidance. Give them what they want, which is by her logic here, Sally. What we should do is just give bank robbers the money in the bank, or give people the pot they were going to break into the pot stores to steal, or give the embezzler the money so they don't have to embezzle the money from government. That's what we should do, right, Sally Bagshaw? Now, on Twitter, I had an interaction with a guy about this gun safe issue, the Seattle City Council pretending they can force people to lock up their guns. I asked, what are we doing this for cars? You know, some 16-year-old's not supposed to have his dad's car, God forbid, goes out and kills somebody. Is that car owner now criminally liable? Or someone doesn't keep their alcohol locked up. Their 16-year-old kid gets drunk, takes the car, drives it. Maybe it's their car. Might the kid driving his own car, given to him by his parents. He goes out, God forbid, kills somebody. That parent's now criminally liable? We could go on and on forever. But it's the focus as you look through the city council. It was once again in the jungle. Remember what it was? Who was the city councilwoman? Do you remember this? Who didn't want us to call it the jungle? Do you remember this? I'm trying to remember what she wanted us to call it, like the South Seattle Green Bay Green Belt living area. Do you remember this? That she was upset that we called it the jungle. So a woman was stabbed in the jungle down in the Duwamish area. Yeah, well, wait, that's the jungle they shut down. Well, how could that be? They shut the jungle down. WashDOT, SDOT, they all went in there and shut it down. It's not shut down. Everybody knows it's not shut down. What's the focus? Putting your gun in a safe. What's the focus? How many weeks in a row were there murders in Belltown? What's the focus? Put your gun in a safe. What's the focus of the Seattle City Council? What does Sally Bagshaw, for instance, go to D.C. to talk about? This is hilarious.
So good to see you all. Thank you. I'm Sally Bagshaw, and I chair the Human Services and Public Health Committee. And I want to tell you...
Okay, Human Services and Public Health Committee, right? Right? Okay, so feces on the ground, needles on the ground, people living in unsanitary conditions, a piece in the Puget Sound Business Journal by an infectious disease doctor, an expert in infectious diseases, saying you have a calamity coming. We are seeing diseases like trench warfare diseases we haven't seen since World War II, or did he say one? I don't recall. Resurfacing in our cities because of what you're doing here. So she heads up this committee. So what's she here to talk about? Why did she fly to D.C.?
First, about when I was introduced to Age Friendly, which was about 2 years ago. And I went to Washington, D.C., went to the main AARP office.
Okay, so this is about, right, old people, making sure that old people aren't accosted. Remember that couple was in their home? They were in their home. Guys pulled up. They tried to talk the older gentleman into letting him into the house. He didn't want to. So they beat him up, went into the house, beat the older woman who lived there, this man's wife, in their beautiful home in the Columbia City area. Beautiful. The man had been out manicuring his lawn with his own hands, this house he loves, no doubt. They beat him, they beat her, and they leave. So no doubt Sally Bagshaw's back there talking about age, you know, making it easy to live. For the aged?
Amanda Frame, somewhere along the line, thank you so much for your good work. But in that process, I learned about Age Friendly is not about those of us who are getting older. It's about all of us who are getting older.
All right, so protecting all of us from crime, right, Sally? From crimes like sex trafficking, because drug cartels and sex trafficking go hand in hand. In fact, sex trafficking is a greater source of profit. It is a 700% ROI, return on investment. It is a $150 billion business. The drug cartels always get into the sex trafficking business. So clearly, it's about protecting the older people from home invasion robberies, right? And protecting the youth from sex trafficking. That's why you flew to D.C., Sally, right?
It's about who and how we live in this community.
Okay, so it's about who and how we live. Got it.
It's about a place where if we can walk.
Yep.
All of us can walk and have healthy spaces, have sidewalks and crosswalks that are easy to get across, and not just if you're having a little difficulty or that maybe I'm a little slower than I used to be, but that we make sidewalks, crosswalks so good.
So good.
Somebody, a mom, a parent with a stroller or...
Yeah. This is filler language. This is someone who's standing in front of a mic. I know exactly what she's doing. She realizes, oh my gosh, I have absolutely nothing to say. So I'm going to say children and mothers and people who want to be mothers and aunts and uncles and cousins of aunts and uncles and neighbors and old people. And did I say moms?
A seven-year-old who is learning to ride her bike.
See?
But this is good for all of us. We know that if there is good and safe housing, good transportation, open communities, places where we can go that we feel welcome. Such things as always having an opportunity where we can learn and grow.
This is a Seattle City Councilwoman in a city that's being crushed by gang violence back to D.C. to talk about spaces to learn in public for old and young people. Man, I bet this is a great, great comfort to this woman. Girlfriend of a man who was shot and killed near the show box. I think this is Como News she spoke with.
I'm not going to stop until I found out what happened and who did it.
He was a family man. Always about his family, about the kids. And someone took his life and it's not right.
There's so many people at that concert. Someone had to know, see. Somebody has to know something. I just want justice for not only me and my kids, but for his mom, his family, sisters, brothers. Everybody wants to know why and what happened.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if that lady's comforted. Sally Bagshaw went back to Washington, D.C. to talk about 7-year-olds being able to ride their bikes across intersections and places to learn in public. And the Seattle City Council, they made sure that this lady who lost her husband, her name is Jennifer Redburn, she lost her boyfriend, Clement Harry Morales. Well, I guess we could say to all the victims, seeing their family members murdered in Smack Daddy Dow Constantine and Heroin Dan Satterberg's paradise.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
City Council told people to lock their guns up in metal boxes. Focus. Incredible leadership. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. The folks at the Seattle or the New York Times, they're done. They're done soft peddling. They just came right up and said, let's have ourselves a gang war. Speaking of gang wars, we'll get to that. Also, some of the panic pieces leading up to the nomination of the president's choice to be on the Supreme Court. Reminder, 6 o'clock. We're going to go live to that. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. People are upset about the Seattle City Council. I don't blame you. Text line 800-465-8770. So my gun, which has never seen a crime, gets locked up, but we can't lock up Hillary or people in the FBI have committed crimes. Pablo, I feel you. Todd, I didn't get to vote on this new law. I wasn't allowed to be involved, so I shall not comply. Just one more ridiculous leftist law that I will not comply with. Way to go, Washington State. Hey, Todd, I consider myself a responsible gun owner, but I don't lock up my gun. I have a childless home. What's the point? I guess the point is you don't want your gun to get stolen. I'd encourage you to lock it up. But I get your point. It's not exactly a risk in your home that a child's going to get a hold of it. I just hate to see you lose your firearm. Hey, Todd, I consider myself a responsible gun owner, and it's none of anyone's blanking business if I lock them up or not. This is supposed to be a free country, for crying out loud. You know what's so fascinating is watching the onus shift from the criminal who broke into your house to you. I flatly guarantee, and someone said this on Twitter, and I think they're exactly right, I flatly guarantee they're going to shop some case on this. They're going to find some way to hang someone out on this. Right, they're going to find someone who didn't lock the gun up. Yeah, it's Patrick Parkhurst on Twitter. Mr. Herman, now they have one more tool they can use to confiscate firearms from law-abiding citizens. They know criminals won't follow the law, but how much do you want to bet there will be a trial case set to watch to enforce this? Yeah, exactly. Let's get to this. The New York Times. The New York Times is following down this path of fear, but they're basically suggesting now, the New York Times, basically suggesting a gang war.
Everything is at stake when you're looking at the SCOTUS pick. Everything that we've worked for decades is at stake. Abortion, abortion, workers' rights, everything. Same-sex marriage, LGBTQ rights.
What's the court going to look like for the next 30 years?
We're looking at a destruction of the Constitution of the United States, as far as I can tell.
This is a line that's been drawn about whether we are going to criminalize women.
This nomination that move the court in a really dangerous direction.
It's a very thin line between putting a woman in prison for a stillbirth or a miscarriage that she's blamed for something she did during her pregnancy, and criminalizing abortions.
Yeah, it's a thin line, isn't it? Between a miscarriage and an abortion, it's basically the same thing. Well, except it's not. Secondly, I hate to be the bearer of bad news for some. I don't see this court overturning Roe versus Wade. I could see them saying the states have the right to do that. I could easily see them saying that. Because the fact is, the word abortion does not appear in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. It's based upon life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. When you base it upon something that open to interpretation, which is what people do, it's a weak case. Right. So they could easily say, well, this is the power of the states. This is not the job of the federal government. They could say that. Will they? I think it would cause, people have said, a 50 state civil war. I think that's sort of true. The New York Times. I'm not saying that they shouldn't try this. I just want to be clear. The New York Times says it's time to go to the mattress to fight against Trump's Supreme Court nominee. Does anyone know the phrase go to the mattress? It's a euphemism for a gang war. Let's go to the mattress. Let's fight it out. Let's get down to the ground. Fight it out. So the New York Times writes, as hyperpartisanship, gridlock, and general abdication of responsibility have rendered Congress increasingly dysfunctional, the judiciary is taking an ever greater hand in policy areas ranging from immigration to guns to ballot access to worker rights. Let's start there. New York Times, that's why we want a new justice who will not get into policy arenas. You're saying it's increasingly getting into policy arenas. We agree on that. It doesn't belong there, but you want it there when it's on your side. So they continue. Since the judiciary is playing a critical role in shaping this nation, an ever-increasing hand in policy, it's time for Democrats to go to the mattress to do whatever they need to do to stop the Trump nominee, whatever they need to do. Now, in normal times, insane times, I'd listen to that and say, okay, go to the mattress, euphemistic, etc. But we're not insane times as it relates to this president and the media's obsession with him. Here's some acts of violence or near violence that have occurred recently. As the New York Times says, go to the mattress. As the New York Times gives into that fear audio I played, or in fact amplifies it. A New York guy was arrested for going to the GOP offices in New York at a campaign headquarter and announcing he was going to kill all supporters of Republicans. Hey, I'm going to kill y'all. Arrested. You know about the idiot who ripped the MAGA hat off a kid in a fast food restaurant, threw a drink in his face? He's been fired, the hat ripper. Vandals went and smashed the windows of the GOP's offices in Nebraska. There was a suspect arrested for threatening to kill the FCC chairman, his kids, threatening to kill his kids. Elaine Chao and Mitch McConnell got accosted by a group of so-called immigration protesters. Then McConnell basically got threatened by people saying, "We know where you live," walking next to him. Protesters surrounded the apartment where Stephen Miller lives, presidential advisor. The Department of Homeland Security issued a warning to their officers to be on alert after a burned animal carcass was found on the porch of one of their offices, after Antifa had published a list of where they lived, after Antifa had gone through Portland and put up wanted posters with the home addresses of DHS officers. You know about Pam Bondi, the AG in Florida, being spat at the Mr. Rogers movie, etc. The confrontation of Christian Nielsen at her home. And the New York Times is now saying, go to the mat. Fox News. You know, Alan Dershowitz has decided to defend the president on some things, not on all things and not on most things. But he was on Fox News, and this is what's supposed to happen. It's supposed to be chaos, because this is your ratings.
The blue wave is coming. We will both talk about it after the election. And if I'm wrong, have at me. But I will be having at you, my friend.
The gentleman this week that had his hat taken off and beverage thrown on him, that's civic chaos, Chris. It may be a smaller
that's worse
amount.
Than the woman who that's worse than the woman who died in Charlottesville,
yeah,
right?
But you know,
the woman who died
David,
in Charlottesville. And then the president said there were fine people on both sides there. So let's talk about civic chaos. Let's put it into some perspective. I'm sorry Alan Dershowitz got disinvited from a barbecue on Martha Vineyard, but there are people dying because of right-wing violence.
Really? Because of right-wing violence, you say. Fascinating. Yeah, that right-wing wacko who went and shot up that baseball game. Right. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show as we count down to the president's announcement of the new Supreme Court nominee. Go through some of the backgrounds of, I'm hearing Amy Coney Barrett is no longer on the list, so we can't go through her background. So we'll pick a couple of the other ones. I want to talk about Amy Coney Barrett. I'm sad. We'll get to that as we continue on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Awaiting the announcement of the new Supreme Court nominee by the President of the United States. It's a big day. And the Supreme Court is so precious. And I sound like the president when I say it that way, so precious. But it really is. And it shouldn't be this precious. It really should not be this precious. At least Chris Coons, Democrat, told a little bit of the truth here.
There's precious little that we procedurally can do. If the Republicans are willing to change the rules of the Senate, as they demonstrated they are, in change.
You mean like Harry Reid did, Chris? Just checking.
Changing the majority threshold required at the fight over now Justice Gorsuch, they changed the rules on filibuster margins. We could pull something that would last a day or two. But if they're willing to change the rules, there's very little we can do with just 49 members that would prevent them from moving ahead with a confirmation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Doesn't stop people like the NARAL president from saying things like this.
We
take the president at his word. He's the president of the United States, and he is certainly the first major party nominee who went on to be president to put a litmus test on Supreme Court justices. And that was to actually overturn Roe v. Wade. So we believe him. He's got a vice president who committed to, throw Roe on the ash heap of history. So we think that's the mindset that many Americans are actually going into this with, because it was such a vocal talking point for him.
Yes, just a single issue. That's all. Nothing else matters. And of course, the only answer is that the federal government mandates it. That's the only answer that's acceptable. It's not that the federal government says, hey, let's return to the experiment of the states. Let's return to how the Federation was described and designed, that we experiment with liberty. Let's do that. This is an everlasting mix of feelings for me. Number one, the Supreme Court should not be this important, because it should never be up to the Supreme Court to say, for instance, since we can all relate to the case of Obamacare, you know, it's not okay for the government to use its might and its power and its confiscatory reach to tell Americans, hey, you know what? We need you to buy asparagus. Here's how much you have to buy every month. And everybody has to buy asparagus. And here's the asparagus vendors you have to buy it from. And we're going to set out some plans. Here's your gold asparagus plan, your silver asparagus plan. Here's your bronze plan. Now, your state, they might come up with another asparagus plan. And that's fine, because we're going to create an asparagus exchange. Now, the fact is, some of you will be paying $20 to $25 a pound for asparagus. We know that's expensive, but that's a way that people who can't afford asparagus can have more asparagus. Now, they may get asparagus subsidies, because some people can't afford that at all. We're also going to mandate that some changes are made in how asparagus is grown, that right now it's inefficient, and we in the government have determined it's inefficient. Why am I using the word asparagus? Because it shines a light on the mendacity of telling people products they have to buy. The Supreme Court should never be involved in this, because we should have lawmakers who go, oh, we can't do that. We should have some humility. Who the hell are we to tell Americans they have to buy asparagus or roller skates or cigarettes? We're nobody. We have no power to do this. The Supreme Court should never be this important, but it's become this important, because we are in, I've been saying for 3 years, finally, there's some other people who are starting to, and I'm not happy about this, but finally, I'm not alone in noticing the cold civil war. I remember when I first started to talk about that, and I used the phrase cold civil war, I thought, wow, am I becoming an extremist? Am I becoming someone who's just left the realm of reality? No. I think I'm becoming someone who's noticed that there's a real war over civilization. We recognize that. The Supreme Court should also be more important. See, I told you it's a conundrum. It should never be this important, but it should be more important than emotion, more important than our side. Now, this is more of a liberal problem than a conservative one. Here's what I mean. Originalism is the belief that the founders wrote what they meant. Does that seem a weird thing? Do you think the founders wrote what they didn't mean? They laid out a progress for changing what they wrote. It's getting a constitutional amendment. It's writing legislation. The very idea of the living, breathing Constitution means that you believe the founders wrote words, but not what they meant. Just what they felt at the time? No, because that would be originalism. That's what they felt. So it should be more important than conservative versus liberal. Why? Why do I lean so hard on the importance of originalism? Because I want to know the rules. If you don't know the rules, you make them up. And societies where people feel free to make up the rules are not the societies in which you want to live. Unless you want a world where you either work for Negan, like in The Walking Dead, or you join Rick in fighting Negan. That's where the rule of emotion will get you every single time. Reminder, we're going to extend the program to 6 o'clock today, or past 6 o'clock, as we go live to the president's announcement, the nominee for the Supreme Court.
Down on Main Street,
back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. This would be a little bit of a weird transition because I normally wrap the show up here with a personal note. And I thought about how to do this because we're going to extend the show. So, gosh, in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to be finding out who the president is going to nominate to be on the Supreme Court of the United States. So we're going to extend the show. But folks really have been so nice about this segment, a personal note, that I thought we would wrap up this regular portion of the Todd Herman Show and then do a new portion of the Todd Herman Show next hour. And I'm going to do 6 to 6:30 as we listen to the President of the United States nominate someone to be in the Supreme Court. So with that, on a personal note tonight, I have a friend of mine that I don't see very often, but still very much consider a friend. In fact, I haven't seen him in years. He had us out to his beautiful, beautiful home, and we rode his horses and met his lovely wife and just beautiful family. His name is Richard. He is one of the greatest examples of being a true Christian I know. Richard has the capacity to do things that sometimes I find very hard. I've shared with you on the show that I used to really struggle with anger, really anger. Like struggle with it. And I'd got myself in trouble by just giving into anger from time to time. I mean, I never, you know, broke things or beat people up, but man, I've yelled at people and said awful things. And I've gone into some detail on the air. Now it's been, hold to my daughter. It has been, it's funny how that's, we measure things, how old our kids are. I think it's been 30 years, or now I'm not quite that, maybe 25 years since I really embarrassed myself in anger and really just had to ask forgiveness. And to me, it came about through prayer. It's the craziest thing. And it came about by spending time with Richard. Richard's a guy who I'd be driving in the car with, and someone would be going really fast. You know, usually that's me, but someone would be going really fast and zipping by us. And you know that old rule, anyone going slower than you is an idiot, and anyone going faster than you is insane. And this guy was, you know, goes zipping past us. And so I made some remark, and Richard would say, well, maybe you don't see next to him his child bleeding in his seat, trying to get his child to the hospital. Come upon someone going slowly and say, you know what, maybe you don't see the fact that they're in tears because they just got the worst news of their life. And maybe they're not really thinking about driving. So he's always in this mood of being able to cast things into a context of caring, into a context of caring for the other. This morning, I was I came in early and I was jogging. And sometimes I run through Seattle, so it's different scenery. And this morning, I decided to run around Green Lake. So I ran from the radio station around north and up across the Ship Canal Bridge and just ran around Green Lake. I'm not Green Lake. Ran around the Lake Union and came back around to the radio station. And as wrapping up my run, I was headed north back up to the radio station. And there was a lady who was killing it. And she was just marching. I'd seen her earlier, and I don't know if she did the same loop. If so, she passed me at some time. But I came upon this lady who was absolutely fit, and she was wearing fitness clothes. I don't want to be too like exact, but she was wearing basically a running bikini. Okay, basically what it was. And I thought, wow, she's really fit, and she does this a lot, but she's really aggressive about her running, like darting through things. And I started to think in my mind, man, you know how lucky you are, and how gifted you are genetically. And man, I got into that stupid trap that we set for ourselves. So I finally caught her, and it was an effort, a real effort. And I kind of just put in my mind, I'm gonna slow down once I catch this lady. And it's a game I play with myself when I'm jogging, because I don't particularly enjoy jogging. Finally caught up to her. And you know what she has on her arms? Back of her arm, she had a Band-Aid. Now, it wasn't a Band-Aid, like a real Band-Aid. It was a tattoo. And on the back of her neck, she has another tattooed Band-Aid. And on her left wrist, she had a tattooed Band-Aid. And then I saw around her wrist a wristband that I know has to do with eating disorders. And my whole mood changed. I thought, wow, this is someone who's now really in this position of fitness, someone who is now really, really enjoying that lifestyle. And my heart went to a different place. It went to a place where there are people who struggle with that disorder, with this eating disorder. And I went to this place of realization that I'd done the worst thing. I had just constructed some reality about this young woman as I was jogging and built up this reality. Here's a Richard way to look at this, is that everybody has a secret pain. Everybody does. There's no one who doesn't have a secret pain. I've been reading so much about eating disorders lately and studying them so much that I've come across this fact that there are probably in our midst right now 30 to 40% of people who've got this secret pain. And these disorders, they're savage. What they will do to people, they will steal from people. They will literally, particularly young kids, boys and girls, they will steal what they think of themselves and they'll fool them into thinking they're worthless. They will steal their self-confidence, the eating disorders they are. They're very much, like I'm saying, like thieves. They will take from them sense of self-confidence, and not just in how they feel about their bodies, but in how they feel about their minds and their achievements, etc. And so I had caught this young woman. That sounds terrible. I had caught up to this young woman, and we got to an intersection. There were a lot of buses going by, and so we were kind of forced to wait there. And I took my headphone off, and she said, "Hey, did you run all the way around the lake?" I said, "Yeah, I ran all the way around the lake." She goes, "Oh, it's a long run." I said, "Yeah, I saw you. You're killing me. I was trying to catch up with you, and I'm not going to be able to stay with you very long." And she laughed, and I said, "Hey, I saw your Band-Aids." She goes, "Oh, yeah." I said, "Yeah, I know what they mean." She goes, "Yeah." I said, "I'm really happy for you. Are you fully recovered?" She goes, "No, I don't know that you ever fully recovered." She said, "But I'll tell you what, it took me 15 years to be able to wear something like this and to run and to not feel that people are looking at me like a freak." Oh, you guys, I felt so terrible because I brought it up. And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up." She goes, "No." She goes, "You noticed my tattoos. That's fine. That's fine. But it's taken me 15 years to feel okay with who I am." And she goes, "Do you know anything about this?" I said, "Well, I know about the Band-Aids." And she goes, "Well, then you know." And she had this look in her eyes. I said, "Yeah, I guess I know. I've never experienced it, but I know." And she goes, "Oh, and by the way, thanks." I said, "For what?" She said, "You didn't say it." I said, "Oh, yeah, I didn't say it." She goes, "I appreciate that. Have a good run. It's nice to meet you, sir. Nice to meet you, young lady." What didn't I say? Well, if you know the world of eating disorders, you know what I didn't say. If you don't, can I suggest something to you? Particularly if you've got kids in junior high or high school, figure out what I didn't say. Because it would have been easy to say, but I didn't. I'm not anybody's priest or professor, right? I'm not qualified. I'm a broken cat. But the more I learn about what society has done to the minds of our youth and our kids, and sometimes people think it's just girls. It's not. I promise you it's not. And develop this sense of dysphoria about themselves, the more I want us to spend some time getting to know this disorder so that we can spot it and cancel it out, because it's a stinking thief. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I will see you in a couple minutes as we wait for the president's announcement of the Supreme Court nomination. In that brief time, be well, be strong, and be kind. We'll be back in a few minutes.